is ESPN.
Hello and welcome to a jam-packed edition of Football Today. I'm your host, producer Jay Soderberg, with your host, Matt Williamson. Matt, how are you?
I'm great, bud. How you doing?
I'm doing fantastic. We're so jam-packed, we're just going to cut right to it. We're going to get right to the news. Here we go with the quick slants.
Quick slants.
And Big Ben Roethlisberger does, in fact, get suspended 6 games. Came down from Commissioner Roger Goodell yesterday. He must undergo comprehensive behavioral evaluation. The commissioner will review his progress prior to the season and consider reducing the suspension to 4 games. Failure to cooperate could lead to a longer suspension. I doubt he'll fail to cooperate. What are your thoughts on this?
Well, I mean, it sounds like it's deserved. I also think it's a little steep. But, you know, I think there's a message being sent here is, hey, you're one of the faces not only of a prominent franchise, but of the NFL. You know, you're one of our big guns. You're one of our huge assets. And what you've done is completely unacceptable. You know, I do think when it's all said and done, I would bet it ends up being 4 as opposed to 6 or even 8. I mean, unless he's a complete numbskull and you know, gets it bumped up even further.
Mm-hmm.
But I bet in the end it ends up being 4. Which, that I can buy, and I think that's probably legit. 6 to me seems a little rough.
It's still a significant part of the season.
Oh, it sure is. And, yeah, I mean, I really think it hurts their playoff chances quite a bit.
Well, this would hurt them probably even more, because Adam Schefter is reporting that the Steelers have begun contacting teams to see if they'd be willing to trade a high draft pick for Roethlisberger, according to an NFL source. The teams the Steelers have called have been the Rams, 49ers, Raiders, Bills, Jaguars, Seahawks, and Browns. The Rams and Bills are known not to be interested, which I don't understand why they wouldn't be. Adam says he'll start, you know, crossing off more teams as more news has come out. What about this?
Well, what my birdies are telling me is if something happens, it's going to happen today, Thursday, or yesterday. You know, so we've kind of been on call and doing a lot of stuff locally about, you know, what happens if it hits and, you know, how we're going to react and all that thing, all those things. My gut tells me now that he's going to be a Raider or nothing. You know, he screams Oakland Raiders right now, that they've taken on some character flawed human beings in the past. But in the end, you know, maybe it's just the kind of the conspiracy theory in me, but I know the Rooneys have an awful lot of power in this league. And my thoughts are they can kind of use this to their advantage a great deal now, is, you know, make it very public knowledge that we're thinking about sending, hey, Ben, we're thinking about sending you to the Raiders. You know, we're thinking about sending you to Buffalo. We're thinking about sending you to Siberia. You know, you're going to no man's land where nobody wants to play, and we've had enough. And in the end, I think they can say, you know what, he had this 6-game suspension. We thought about shopping him. And we couldn't get enough because of that. So we're going to revisit it in a year from now. And in the meantime, you get your quarterback to fly straight and shape up, hopefully. And if those indicators aren't enough to get him to be a model citizen, a better worker, a better film junkie, you know, all of the above, then you do consider it down the road. But they have an awful lot invested in him financially. You obviously can't get, you know, enough investment, you know, enough back on your return if you were going to trade him just for, you know, the 8th pick in the draft, the 9th pick in the draft, or something like that. You're going to become a worse football team. And in the end, you know, you need to win football games. And sure, Ben's made a lot of mistakes, but he's a young guy, and you could see 2 or 3 years from now him being a completely different person if he gets it through his head that what he's done isn't acceptable. So I think it's a great leverage tool overall for the Steelers.
Clearly, if the Steelers trade Roethlisberger, they'd have to take a quarterback in the draft, despite having traded for Byron Leftwich.
Maybe. You know, I don't love Clawson. I don't think he's a great fit in this town, necessarily. I don't think they'll get Bradford. Then who else? You know, I don't know that the other guys are any better than Dennis Dixon for this year. And, you know, if you, I might hand the ball to Dennis Dixon or Leftwich and try to do everything possible to enhance that running game. You know you're going to have a pretty stellar defense. You're obviously going to take a big step back no matter what. But, you know, if you can fortify your needs other than quarterback this year, give it a shot with so-so prospects, you know, Dixon, Leftwich, and then address it a year from now. But I don't like anything setting up for them to you know, improve drastically at the quarterback position through the draft if Ben is not a Steeler.
Steelers have Dixon, Batch, and Leftwich on the roster. One, will all three make it through camp? And two, which one will start for those four games?
I think Batch is the third and final option of the four, you know, assuming once Ben comes back and he's on the roster, I could see Batch hanging it up. I think Dixon's here for sure. I know they're high on him. I think he shows promise. He doesn't cost you a lot. And they just added another year to Leftwich's extension. So I think he's pretty safe to be here for, you know, 2010, 2011. So the odd man out to me would probably be Charlie Batch. And I know that he's considered retirement in the past, so maybe he would just hang it up and kind of ease into the sunset gracefully. But my guess is starter would be Dixon. I think they want to give him the ball, give him every opportunity in training camp to take the job, you know, show what he can do.
Quick slants.
The Eagles have dealt this year's fifth-round pick to Denver, who is sending their tight end Tony Scheffler to the Detroit Lions, who are trading their linebacker Ernie Sims to Philadelphia. Detroit drafted Sims at number 9 overall from Florida State in 2006. He started 8 games last season. Scheffler, a restricted free agent, had been skipping the Broncos' offseason program. By the way, this is the first three-team trade in the NFL.
Wow. I like it. I like it for Detroit in that he's extremely different from Brandon Pettigrew. You know, Pettigrew is known as a blocker. Scheffler is much, I would say Scheffler is as much wide receiver as he is tight end. So I think you'll see a lot of double tight end sets with both those guys. And depending what defensive personnel grouping you get, you either keep him in as an inline blocker or as an inline Y, or you split him out and get him on a linebacker. And I think he could be very effective, particularly near the red zone. He'll be a nice safety blanket option for Stafford, you know, which is exactly what they're trying to do. You know, give him some options to work with, and I think it's a good move for them. Ernie Sims doesn't fit the new scheme quite as much. He's a Derrick Brooks type. He came out of Florida State as a first-round pick. Tampa 2, weak side, run-and-hit, undersized, aggressive linebacker who's been hurt a lot and isn't exactly what they want at the position. I think they're a better football team with Scheffler than they are Sims. And the Eagles, it's worth the risk. They don't give up a lot. They get a former first-round pick who has a lot of ability. You know, if protected, he can make a lot of plays.
Quick slants.
Jason Taylor agrees to a 2-year deal with the Jets.
Yeah, I like it. I talked about this 2 weeks ago, wrote a column about it. It's a good fit for them because they have Golston. They have, you know, the two starters from last year, Pace and Thomas. Golston hasn't shown anything, but maybe if he hangs out in the meeting room with Jason Taylor, uses him as a mentor, you might get a little more out of him. You might, you know, move his development along a little faster. But what's nice is you have the other two guys. So I don't think Jason Taylor's going to get worn down. I think he can play limited snaps, stay fresh, come in on passing downs, play some early downs because he is good against the run, but not a ton. You know, you want him fresh for the playoffs. You want him there for the long haul, and they have the ability to do that now. So their first round pick to me is now screaming defensive line more so than anything else, too.
Quick slants.
Patriots signed wide receiver Torrey Holt to a 1-year deal. My thing is, haven't they learned their lesson with Joey Galloway?
Yeah, the difference is Galloway was so reliant on speed that when you lose that explosion, you lose everything. You know, where Holt is a little bit, he's a tremendous route runner in his prime, probably knows a few more tricks of the trade to get open. But I hope nobody thinks that he's the answer or they're going to get anything close to the Torrey Holt of old. I think he's done.
No.
Quick slants.
Vikings signed cornerback Lito Shepard.
He's another overrated guy. You know, his name carries more weight than his actual play on the field. But it's a big, big need for them. You know, that doesn't mean that they won't go corner with their first-round pick or early in the draft. They certainly need to do that. But it just lightens the load a little bit. But I wouldn't expect a lot out of him either.
Quick slants.
The Rams traded defensive end Adam Carricker to the Redskins.
Yeah, this is unfortunate because he used such a high pick on the kid, and he was miscast from the beginning. You know, he's really a 3-4 end. That's what he looked like he should be coming out of Nebraska. He didn't play real well for St. Louis. didn't fit in as a defensive end or a defensive tackle. Then he got hurt, and he doesn't really fit Steve Spagnuolo's system at all either. So it goes down as another wasted early Rams draft pick. But if you're the Skins, once again, you give up nothing, you know, although their draft now has about nothing left in it. They're using all their picks on veterans. But he fits their new scheme. I mean, he's a 3-4 defensive end. And, you know, the next step of the process could be, makes him a little easier to trade Albert Haynesworth if that's the decision they try to do. But I think they could get a lot out of Carricker.
Quick slants.
The Jaguars traded defensive end Quinton Groves to the Raiders for a 5th-round pick.
Yeah, this is interesting. You know, Bill Williamson called me yesterday, and he broke the news to me, getting a reaction. And my first thought was, boy, that's strange. I mean, Groves is an undersized, upfield defensive end who once, you know, similar to Carricker, was miscast on his team with the Jags. He really should be a 3-4 outside linebacker type. And what are the Raiders doing? You know, they're pretty much a 4-3 team, and they haven't made it public. But, boy, this is a big flag to me that they might want to go to a 3-4. You know, you have Richard Seymour, who obviously would be a much better fit in the 3-4, and they're starting to collect these former high-pick edge rushers in Groves, Cameron Wimbley, you know, that are better off as 3-4 outside linebackers. So I'm curious if you're going to see more 3-4 looks in Oakland.
Quick slants.
The last one real quick, Drew Brees ready to tackle the Madden curse. He's going to appear on the cover of Madden 11. Count the good thing the Saints got the Super Bowl last year, because it ain't going to happen this year.
No comment. I'm not interested.
All right, we got a lot more to get to. It's draft day. Here we go deep with Daniel. I'm not even going to attempt his last name. I'm going to let you butcher it when you bring him in. Here's Daniel Mulgaloon from the NFL Draft Bible.
Expanding the topics with a wide open field. Go deep.
And now, next on the slate, we got Daniel Mulgaloon from NFL Draft Bible. Daniel, first of all, I hope I didn't butcher your name too bad. And secondly, I'm glad you're coming on. You guys have a great publication, and you guys do tremendous work there.
Thanks a lot, Matt, for having me on. It's always a pleasure.
Good. I hope I didn't butcher the name too bad, though, did I?
No, not too bad. I mean, you butchered it a little bit, but definitely I've heard a lot worse.
Good. Good. As long as you're not holding it against me.
Let's
get into this draft tonight. I mean, it's Christmas Day. I'm jumping out of my skin. I can't wait. I'm sure you're the same way. Bear with me here a second, though. Do you agree with me? Maybe the order might fluctuate a little bit, but do you think the top six are set? Bradford, Sue, McCoy, Williams, Okung, Barry. Are those six going in the first six picks?
I think so, yeah. I agree with you in the sense that maybe the order isn't as set as some people might think it is. I think number three will be interesting. I think Barry still might be tempting to Tampa. We'll see what happens. But
really?
Ultimately, yeah, I think those are clearly the top six guys at this point.
And do you see any chance that KC deviates? They're the ones that maybe would screw this up and take a Bulaga or... You know, I mean, Pioli, I think, is a little hard to trust right now after taking Tyson Jackson with the first pick last year.
Yeah, I mean, he threw the real big curveball last year for sure with Tyson. Could he take a Bulaga? Sure, I could see that. That's the one guy that could sneak in there. I think that's somebody we've had in a couple of our mock drafts when we did him going to Kansas City. I think everybody probably sees offensive tackle at that spot. We actually could see the Redskins going with Trent Williams, which would leave Okung there for Kansas City. That's kind of how I'm leaning towards it shaking out at this point.
And then I would assume Barry goes six, though. So in the end, the same six guys probably are gone.
Probably. Yeah. Although, I'll throw one other guy out there. I think C.J. Spiller would have to be tempting to Pete Carroll at number six. I know some people might think it's kind of high, but, you know, I think he could be in the NFL what Reggie Bush was supposed to be, and Seattle really could use some dynamic offensive players, and CJ would provide them, you know, not only with a running back, but a receiver and a return guy. And if that were to be the case, I don't see Barry going past Cleveland at seven. So he might, you know, move down one slot at the most. But either way, I think Barry going at six or seven would be a great steal. In my opinion, he's the number two player in this draft.
I wanted to get to Cleveland, and I want to bring up a handful of different teams and their spots and their fits. And I think there's a handful of them that doesn't work out real well. And honestly, I think Cleveland's the whole focal point here, because I think we pretty much agree those top six are probably going to go. Cleveland would do cartwheels if Seattle did take Spiller, I think, and Barry fell to them. I don't see it personally happening. I mean, I guess you think there's a chance. But what do you see Cleveland doing at 7, assuming those six are gone?
Yeah, that's real interesting what they're going to do there. I mean, they could go in a wide variety of directions. At this point, I still think they're ultimately going to end up addressing their needs in the secondary. So I'd have to lean towards them either going with Joe Hayden, the corner out of Florida, or maybe Earl Thomas, the safety, you know, out of Texas. I actually spoke to Joe in New York 2 days ago and asked him where he thought he was going to go. And he said he thinks 7 will be the highest, 13 the lowest. So I think he's got a feeling that he might go there. So I think Cleveland, one way or the other, is going to look to address their needs in the defensive secondary.
Yeah, I personally think Earl Thomas would be the best fit for him. I know people think that's a little early, but he's a good player. He fits a need. You know, I could certainly see Cleveland trying to move, though. I could see them trying to get to 5, maybe with KC to grab Barry, maybe move down 3 or 4 spots to still get Thomas or Hayden.
Yeah, I agree with you, though. I mean, if the guy's a good football player, is it really that big of a deal to get him, you know, 4 or 5 slots higher than it's supposed to go? I mean, I think we put a little too much emphasis on value on draft day. I mean, to me, the value is getting a good football player, right? Not necessarily somebody who looks like, you know, a good pick on draft day. If you get a lot of good football players, even if you quote-unquote reached, but if they turn out to be good, I mean, you know, if had New England taken Tom Brady in the 3rd round, that would have been considered a bad pick, right, on draft day.
Right, right. I think it's a good thing you brought up, and that's something I wanted to mention at some point during this podcast, is nobody cares if Earl Thomas, I mean, 3 years from now, if he's in the Pro Bowl, nobody cares if Earl Thomas went 7, 10, 11, 12. It was a good pick, you know.
Exactly.
You know, and if he fits your needs, you got to go get those guys.
I think the one interesting thing with Cleveland is, you know, could they be interested in Clawson? Could they go down the Notre Dame quarterback road again?
Yeah, I mean, I wouldn't blame them if they did. I'm not the biggest Clawson fan in the world, but you do need to have that quarterback in place. Their quarterback situation's a nightmare. I can buy that. And there's probably 5 guys I could name that I could buy Cleveland getting involved with, including a guy like McClain or one of the pass rushers or, you know, Hayden, like you mentioned, or Dan Williams if they're going to shop Sean Rogers. So a trade down to me works for them. If they go to 10 or 11, they're still going to get something that helps them a lot.
Exactly, yeah. That's the ideal type of team because they're not, you know, unless, like you said, unless Barry gets there or unless they could trade up for Barry, it really does make sense for them to trade down. Like you said, at 9, 10, 11, they'll probably still get a comparable guy or maybe the exact guy they'd want to take at 7.
Exactly. And the team I think is most likely, and I'm not going on a limb here, is Jacksonville. I think there's very little chance they'll trade up. I think they're a great candidate to trade down, though. And they're another team that's a little bit in draft no man's land, like I think Cleveland is at number 10. Do you agree with that? Do you think there's a good chance they try to do everything possible to move down, pick up an extra second rounder after losing their second rounder from last year?
Well, this is the thing. I think a lot of teams would like to trade down. The problem is, can you find a partner to trade up with you?
Right.
You know what
right.
I mean? Especially if this is going to end up being the last draft with this economic structure where, you know, potentially there could be slotting in next year's draft and you're not going to have to pay these kind of salaries. I think a lot of teams, especially like a Jacksonville, who we know isn't, you know, raking in the dough compared to a lot of NFL teams, I'm sure they would love to trade down, but can they find somebody who's willing to trade up?
Yeah, I think that's well said, too. I think there's more teams that want to trade down than want to trade up. But it's funny, we did this fans mock draft this week, and we had Philly actually move up to the 10 spot to get Joe Hayden. And I could see that actually being a possibility, or even a New England moving up and being aggressive. I think there's 3 or 4 teams that are contenders, that are better football teams, that have a lot of resources, that could go get a guy this year.
Yeah, and those are, you know, like you said, contending teams, good teams. They have some extra picks, so they have some wiggle room and maneuverability there. And I know Philly probably, if not Hayden, maybe even Earl Thomas, if he doesn't end up going at 7. I know
right.
They'd love to address the safety position as well.
And you got to think one of them will be there when Jacksonville picks.
I think it's possible Thomas could be there. I mean, I don't think Barry, you know, Barry certainly will not be there. But I think, you know, unless Thomas goes at 7, I think there's definitely a good chance he'll be there at 10.
Thomas or Hayden, I'm sorry.
Yeah, I think definitely one of them will be there.
Yeah. Let me give you 3 names for Denver. Who do you think is most likely their choice at 11? Marquise Pouncey, Dez Bryant, Ricardo McClain.
I'm going with McClain if he's there. And I think he you know, when you switch to that defense, you start, you need to start getting pieces that fit that scheme. And, you know, he was a fabulous player the last 2 years at Alabama, coach under Nick Saban. He understands. He's already learned the defense for 3 years. He's somebody who's really known as a coach on the field. So he's got the cerebral part of the game, 260-pound linebacker, just a perfect fit. I really want to see him go to a 3-4 team. I think he could play well in a 4-3 defense, but I think he's just he's just molded to be a 3-4 inside linebacker. So as a football fan, I'd love to see him go to a team like Denver. If not, I'd say number two. I'd go, you know, I could definitely see Dez Bryant going there. That's a slot we've seen him going for a while, you know, especially once they pull the trigger on the Brandon Marshall deal. So he could step in right there and kind of be the heir apparent as the future number one wide receiver in Denver. But I think if Rolando McClain is there, I think it would be tough to pass that kind of linebacker for their defense.
The only thing that I would be critical of that choice, and correct me if you think I'm wrong, would he be a two-down player for them? I mean, that would be my question is, do you take an inside linebacker at 11 if he's going to come off the field in passing downs? I mean, DJ Williams will be the other inside linebacker. He's the more athletic of the two. I think he's the one you want in coverage. He's the better space player. So that would concern me using 11th pick overall, even though everything fits well for 3-4. But if he's coming off the field and throwing downs, that would be a concern for me.
It is a little bit of concern. I mean, he did okay at the college level, but, you know, obviously the speed of the NFL game is a lot different. I wouldn't sell Rolando short just yet because I really think he does have the mind for the game. He does have impressive instincts. So even though he doesn't necessarily have the speed you're looking for and the athletic ability you're looking for in a kid that could play on third down, I still think there's a chance that he could be a three-down player. So I wouldn't pencil him, you know, I wouldn't write that in ink just yet that he's only a two-down guy.
Okay, fair enough. The Giants at 15, and I know some guys actually from your publication got in contact with me because they were very interested that I think Weatherspoon, the outside linebacker who could possibly play inside, would be a very good fit for the Giants at 15. More so than McClain, actually. And there's also there's a very good chance that McClain won't be there at 15. Do you see that as a fit? I mean, they're going to a new defense with Fuel. They need to stress speed. They need to be more of a Tampa 2 type of system. And I think he's an ideal fit, to be honest with you, as a middle linebacker for their new scheme. They were very, very slow there last year. What do you think about that?
It's an intriguing pick. You know, most people, including us, have him pegged more as an outside linebacker in a 4-3, more likely inside in a 3-4 defense. But he definitely has the ability to cover sideline to sideline, and I definitely see where you're going with that. He's a better fit. Like I said, I think McClain is an ideal 3-4 guy. I think too often teams don't, you know, see that in the NFL. And, you know, guys don't, you know, sometimes it is horses for courses, and not every guy is going to be as good in any scheme. So I think Weatherspoon could be a better fit in terms of being a Mike linebacker in the Giants scheme. And he also, you know, he's got some leadership to him, so he could definitely light a little fire under that defense. Although I have to say that is a little different than the traditional, you know, Giant type of guy. They usually don't go for the louder, boisterous player. But scheme-wise, I could see the argument for him being a better fit than McClain.
Yeah, I just don't see McClain being the pick there, even if he's available. You know, that was a huge problem with them last year is they were very slow up the middle, and they were exposed in coverage over and over and over. If they don't go Weatherspoon, and I understand I'm one of the only ones looking that direction, I could certainly see him going defensive end. There should be some, you know, really attractive options there at 15. Or what about Mike Iupati? Can you see either one of those directions for the Giants at 15?
I think Iupati is certainly a possibility. I agree with you. I think defensive end, if a Derek Morgan, who I think I had going there in my last mock draft, or Jason Pierre-Paul is there. I think we've seen already Reese loves to take these big athletic defensive ends. He goes by the philosophy of you can't have enough pass rushes. But I think if those guys aren't there, I could see them go Iupati, no doubt about it. I think he's a high riser in this draft. I think he's definitely going top 20 and could sneak into the top 15 as a guard who some people, I don't think he's personally going to be able to play tackle at the next level, but some people think he has that potential. But he's clearly the number one guard. I think that helps Iupati as well as Pouncey in that the guy after them, there's a big gap. So if you want to get that top guard or that top center, you're going to have to grab him early, most likely.
I'm going to bring up three teams quickly in the bottom third of the draft. Cincinnati's in a unique position for them. And to me, their needs aren't massive, and which is strange for them. This time of year, usually in Cincinnati Bengals history, they have tons of needs, and they need everything. Now, there's some things they could use. You know, they could use a tight end. They could use a free safety. There's some other things they could use. But what direction do you see them going? Two names I'm going to throw at you are Taylor Mays and Jermaine Gresham.
No, you didn't have anybody there with any arrest or any character questions there potentially going to Cincinnati?
Yeah, really.
I think tight end, to me, is their biggest need. They really got little to no production out of that position last year. And, you know, they did draft Kaufman, but he's injury prone, and he still has a lot to prove. And it was kind of surprising that they did have the year they did and were only 26th in passing in the NFL. So it's not as if Carson Palmer was lighting it up, and I think he could really use a weapon like a Jermaine Gresham. I really love this kid's potential. I think if he wasn't injured last year, he would have gone in the top 15 and there's no chance he would be there at 21. I think this year he will be. As for Taylor Mays, I got to be honest. I'm not a huge Taylor Mays fan at all.
I'm not either.
You know, yeah, I think he's a combine guy. I mean, I was really intrigued with him when he was a freshman and he stepped on the field, and you're like, wow, this true freshman is on this field with a bunch of NFL guys. You see the athleticism, you see the size, and you're like, this kid's going to be a stud, except you never really saw him develop much. He's still basically the same guy he was as a freshman. You know, great athletic ability, unbelievable size, but where are the instincts? He takes poor angles to make tackles. You know, he's rarely around the football except until after the catch is made. So I think Taylor Mays has a good chance to be a bust at the next level, and I think 21 would be way too high to grab him, in my opinion. But at the same time, with those numbers, I would not be shocked if he was a first-round pick.
Yeah, that's what I wanted to say. I very much agree with your analysis of him as a player, but if you were to bet your mortgage check on it, is he going in the first round or not? Give me a yes or no.
Yes.
I agree with you. Yeah, I don't want him. I hope my team doesn't take him. I'd like to play against him as opposed to with him, but I bet he ends up in the first round somewhere.
Yeah, I mean, you know, it's hard to believe that 32 teams, that no one's going to get enamored by what he did in Indianapolis.
Exactly. Last two teams, real quick, I wanted to throw two names out for the two Super Bowl teams. I see Saffold, the offensive lineman from Indiana, being a Colt, and I see Mount Cody being a Saint. Yay or nay?
Those are interesting picks. I definitely think Saffold is going to sneak into the first round, and I could see him going into Indianapolis. I think that's the type of guy they would like. They're not going to go for a Bruce Campbell-type player who's more of that boomer-bust type guy, similar to a Taylor Mays with the athletic ability. Saffold has really been a high riser this year, starting, you know, with a fantastic senior season. He really elevated his game, did well in the All-Star process, was very solid at the combine as well. So I think he's a great fit for a team like Indianapolis. As for Cody at New Orleans, that one would surprise me a little bit, you know, considering all the teams that play 3-4, for him to go to a team that's more of a 4-3 team would be kind of surprising. But, hey, he is a run plugger. I think a lot of people focus too much on that he's a two-down player. So what? I mean, if he's just a two-down player, but he's just that kind of beast in the middle that takes up so much space and takes up two blockers, he's going to make the guys to the left and right of him and the guys standing behind him much better. So I think he was such a key cog. He was not the best player on the Alabama defense, but you can make the argument that he was the most important player because it's just hard to find those nose tackles. And if he can do that, he just makes the guys around him better. Don't look at his numbers. His impact goes beyond his stats.
Yeah, I think that's exactly what the Super Bowl champs need, is somebody to be a two-down guy, to get them to third down, to let guys like Vilma run and hit. He doesn't need to play a lot of downs for that defense. And there's going to be times whenever the Saints are blowing their opponent out, and he can spend the fourth quarter with his helmet and sitting on the sidelines with his helmet off. I mean, he can get them to that point, though. And the reason I like Saffold is they have to be in a win-now situation. They're one of the best teams in the league. He's going to come in. He's, like you said, he has very little bust potential. Maybe he isn't a dynamic left tackle, but I bet he could play right tackle. I bet he could play guard for them. He's going to help them next year.
Exactly. And I'm very big on that, Matt. I'm very big on guys who have a higher floor and less of a chance to bust. I think too much we focus on the guys with the potential and the high ceiling. But, you know, that's looking in a perfect world where everything is going to work out, which we know often doesn't happen. Sometimes I feel like, you know, I'll take the safer guy because I want to get some value. I don't want to just waste the first round pick.
Right. I'm very much with you. And hey, I think we need to wrap things up, but I could talk all day about it, but it's coming soon, man. A couple hours away. Daniel, thanks so much for stopping by. And, all the listeners out there should check out NFLDraftBible.com. I have my NFL Draft Bible publication here. I'm checking it out all day and getting ready for the draft, man. Thanks again.
No problem. Anytime, Matt. It was a pleasure.
Now we are fortunate enough to be joined by John Beeson, linebacker, star linebacker from the Carolina Panthers. And personally, I think he's one of the very best in the business. John, how you doing, buddy?
I'm doing good. I appreciate that little comment right there.
Hey, it's just a fact.
It goes a long way when you get snubbed for the Pro Bowl.
Yeah, I don't understand that. It's a tough position, though, man. There's some good linebackers in the NFC.
There is. But you know what? At the end of the day, that's the validation that you get as a player is making a Pro Bowl.
But hey, I mean, I'm telling you right now, I think you're one of the best in the business, and that's not pumping you for the podcast. That's just a fact.
Thanks, man. It means a lot.
Hey, I was the recruiting assistant at Pitt, and we used to recruit Miami pretty heavy and try to recruit against the U, but you went to Chaminade Madonna, right?
Correct.
Can you tell listeners out there what football's like in that town and in that? Yeah, I watched high school film of that school. We're very familiar with high school football and how it's played in that area. It's not exactly like everywhere else in the country.
Well, first off, you know, we want to just talk about Chaminade. I'll just talk about South Florida as a whole. And the reason why I think we are such, you know, great football players is one is hot. You know, if you're competing against a guy up north, you know, those guys got to deal with the elements. You're not going to go out and play football and, you know, snowstorms. I mean, we literally can play football every single day of the year in South Florida. And two, you know, the hidden advantage that we have is a lot of us have track backgrounds. And I really think that if a kid can get into track as well as playing football, it would help him develop so much, learning how to run. And then, you know, when you're a fast and explosive athlete, man, you can take that on to any field or any platform and be a good athlete.
Yeah, that's great advice. Having a track background is absolutely imperative. I think it's a great thing to have, and no question about it. And did you and other star athletes – did everybody dream of going to the U? Is that how it works?
You know what? I think the guys who are fans and as kids, it's nothing like being a part of that fraternity. For me, I actually had an interesting story. I was actually a diehard, Florida State fan. I came out and, you know, I was born in 1985. When I got into football, I was 10. You know, in the 90s, Miami was on probation, and here you have Florida State. They won it in 93, they won it in 99, and they were in contention a bunch of years. So that was really the team that was on TV that I saw more so than Miami, which was, you know, a good 15-minute drive from my house.
I gotcha. Mm-hmm. And why is there – they didn't recruit you, or how did you end up at the U then?
Florida State recruited me extremely hard. With me, what sold me was the family atmosphere when I got there on my visit. And to see all the former players that were back there working out, it just made it seem like a fraternity. It was something I was used to coming out of a small high school where, you know, we had 24 seniors and we were very, very, very tight. And I know that that's always essential if you're going to win at all is being a family first more than just a teammate.
It's often talked about that atmosphere. And do you continue to go back like most of the players, most of the stars? Do you go back and train with, you know, your U teammates and other guy alumni from the university?
Absolutely. I think it's imperative for me. When I was there as a young guy, they would come back and I would just, you know, be in their back pocket. You know, that's compete when we're running 110s. I mean, I could be, you know, lifting weights next to Adrian James or Reggie Wayne. I mean, guys who've done so much in the NFL. And then here I am in college, you know, looking up to these guys and trying to compete with them, asking them different questions about, you know, what's the NFL like and, you know, what do I need to work on? And those guys are willing to give back. And I think, it's important for me to continue that tradition down there.
You know, what's kind of interesting is whenever we were competing against Miami when they were in their prime, and obviously they were the better program, but we were recruiting that area. So you hear stories from recruits and high school coaches and all that. And they used to tell us that their recruiting spiel was pretty easy, that Larry Coker would come sit down in your locker room or sit down in your living room and say, young man, you have 5 years to become a starter at the U. And every 17-year-old in the world thinks he can be a starter.
Yep.
And you're going to be a millionaire. You're going to be a first-round pick. You're going to be a second-round pick. And here's the evidence. It's pretty strong.
And it was straightforward. I would say, you know, when I was coming out of all the schools that recruited me, Miami was probably the least active out of every school. And I didn't take it as you know, being slighted like some people do. I mean, you know what? Kids get caught up in that. You know, which team loved me the most or who showed me the most love and called me all the time and said this and told me how great I was and told me I would start. I mean, that's really not what's going to get you to the next level. What's going to get you to the next level is being around great talent where you can compete and working hard. And that's really what it is. Because once you sign, and even these guys coming out in the NFL draft now, like everyone loves you, everyone wants to know you. But once you sign, you know, they're on to the next guy. You're a part of, you know, the team now. And that's just it. And kids who go to college will tell you the same thing. Like once they got there, kind of everything kind of changed. Like you were just, you know, another player.
Yeah. And a lot of, you know, running backs talk about where they're big fish in small ponds. They get to the U and whoa, there's Frank Gore. There's Willis McGahee. There's Edrin James.
Yep.
Becoming a starter might not be that easy.
Yeah. I mean, you know, here I was, I got there, it was Sean Taylor. It was Brandon Merriweather and a guy by the name of Marcus Maxey and then John Beeson, fourth string safety, from day one. You know, how do you crack that lineup?
It's pretty strong.
But what you do is you learn and you work hard and the beauty of the University of Miami, you know, it only takes 1 year. You go out and play well 1 year, man. You could be, you know, the first overall pick or a first round pick and the rest is history.
Yeah, obviously you moved to linebacker while you were there. And like many kids, you come in at a smaller position and continue to grow up.
Mm-hmm.
That middle linebacker tradition isn't too shabby either. You know, the Ray Lewis, Dan Morgan, Jonathan Vilma, on and on. How much have you learned from those guys individually?
Well, you know what, as a kid, or a young kid coming into college, you see these guys, and you say, you know what, Vilma, what do I need to do? DJ, you know, tell me about, you know, what you see, you know, that I'm lacking, or what do I do well? And those guys give back, and for me, it was living up to the hype. I wanted to be mentioned in the same sentence as those guys when they said, you know, Jesse Armstead, Michael Barrow, Nate Webster, Ray Lewis. I mean, it just keeps going on and on and on. And then, you know, all you hear about is, you know, Penn State being linebacker U. And I beg to differ because we're all over the place and doing big things. And, you know, you look at Pro Bowl rosters and, who's at the top of their position in every position. It's guys from the University of Miami.
You know, those guys and the whole environment had to help you a great deal adjusting to the NFL. And, you know, with the NFL draft, you know, right around the corner, it's a week away here. What advice or how can you explain the transition a middle linebacker has to make? I mean, you're sort of the quarterback of the defense. Everything happens a little bit faster at the NFL level. Coverage has to be a lot more difficult. You're looked upon as a leader. You know, you have to play three downs to really make your money. And what adjustments were the hardest for you? And, you know, just explain what adjustments a typical middle linebacker has to make who's called upon to play early.
Well, the first thing I could say, not just for a middle linebacker, but for every rookie, is once you get there, man, the work is just starting. The thing that I did that I think helped me the most was I looked at who the coaches viewed as the leader. The coaches respected what they said, and the coaches, you know, followed these guys and their work ethic. And
who was that when you got to Carolina?
It was Dan Morgan.
Okay.
And I basically was in his back pocket.
Okay.
And I tried to do everything like him. You know, when he said, you know, I should study like this, I mean, I was really attentive to the small details because I know that makes a difference. And, you know what? I didn't expect to have as much pressure put on me so early. I knew I was going to come in and I had to, you know, to win the job. You know, I wasn't a first round pick given the job. I had to go out and win. I didn't start until the first regular season game. Like I had to go out and win in preseason, and I won the job. And here we have Dan Morgan goes down week three, and now I'm called upon to be the leader of the defense. And I'm just like, wow, this is, you know, it's all new to me. But I took the pressure as an opportunity versus being scared of it. And as a rookie, you know, guys come in with the wide eyes, like, man, you know, they're looking at that star on the helmet or that panther on the side of their helmet, and they're saying, man, I'm here in the NFL, and then they get intimidated. But the thing I can say that can get you over the hump the easiest is when you get out there, you're going to be on the third team. You're going to be on the second team. And those guys that you're going to be competing against are the same guys that you competed against in college. They're all there trying to make the team, trying to impress. So just do what you did in college. Those are the same guys you beat up on now in practice. And, you know, don't get, you know, all caught up with the different uniform. Cause that's really what it is. I mean, you know, obviously it's different once you get with the starters, but when that third group, it's all young guys trying to make the team.
Was there any aspect of the position that you feel like was most difficult to transition to? Not even for you, but just for linebackers in general, maybe coverage or pass rush or
the hardest part was for me as a Mike linebacker was looking at a guy like Julius Peppers at the time, he's 7 years in the league, looking at a guy like Mike Rucker, you know, our vocal leader, you know, 9 years in the league, Dan Morgan, 7 years in the league. And it was, hey, what's the call, Beeson? I'm getting the signals. I have to make the checks. I have to get everybody lined up. We're waiting on you. We can't do anything until, you know, John Beeson, the rookie, tells Damian Lewis, 9-year vet, Make, a 6-year vet, what to do. Everyone's looking at me in the huddle. And here I am. I might hit somebody. You know, I got cobwebs, or I make a tackle on the far sideline. I got to get up. We're in 2-minute offense. I got to run across the field. I'm trying to get the signal. You know, then we had different things going on with the spy gate. So we're trying to hide signals and color code things. And, it was overwhelming, but I wasn't afraid of it. I just
and
said,
you
know,
excelled.
Yeah.
You had a great year.
Yeah. I just said, you know what? I'm going to do the best I can for these veterans. And that's really that was a huge motivating factor was, you know, living up and being able to be consistent for these guys because, you know what, that's what they expect. And I think that's how I really earned the respect of those guys and became a leader, you know, team captain in just my second year.
You know, you mentioned a couple of these guys, Julius Peppers, Maki Kumiatu, Damian Lewis. Some of those guys are coming back.
Yeah, man.
Worried.
It's been quite the experience this offseason, really understanding how the nature of the business works. And to see, you know, all those guys, you know, being released was tough because this is the backbone of the Carolina Panthers. These are the faces you've seen, you know, on those platforms, those playoff games, you know, winning, trying to get this, you know, this relatively new franchise, you know, to the top and become a Super Bowl champ. So, did I agree with it? No, but I have to trust in the coaching staff and the guys upstairs who are making all the decisions and say, you know what, we're going to be okay. And looking at it now, it kind of reminds me of college where you go into spring ball and everyone's young and everyone's hungry and everyone has an opportunity to play. You come in and you're behind Julius Peppers, you know you're not starting.
Sure.
You know you're just going to come in and maybe play a few downs to spell him here and there, but you know you're not going to start. But now that it's wide open, you're going to have more competition. And I think that's what makes the University of Miami so special is because the ones, the twos, the threes, they're all equal, but the difference is who wants it. And then you put the best 11 guys out there, and then, you know what, you have national champs.
You mentioned the loss of those three guys, and obviously that's going to hurt, but I see a guy playing next to you in Thomas Davis, who mm-hmm. I think is about to be a household name and a star. Can you comment on him a little bit?
You know what, Thomas, not that he reminds me of myself, because in terms of being athletic and ability, he is miles and miles ahead of me. This guy is one of the most freakish athletes I've ever seen. He ran a 4.42 40 in spring last year at 230, playing linebacker at the speeds, unbelievable. His vertical leap, his hands are massive. I mean, this guy is so special. And the difference for him has been where we are similar. I used to be a safety. He was a safety coming out into the draft and was able to go 14th overall. Here, I made the transition in just my second year in college, so I've been playing linebacker longer than he has. But I think now, you know, 3-4 years into the league that he's played linebacker, he gets it, he understands, and now you're really going to see him start to take over and impose his will and his ability on people because he knows what the position entails versus kind of figuring it out and learning and making that transition into the new position.
And lastly, you mentioned that you are part of RSP Nutrition, is that correct?
Yeah, RSP Nutrition, I'm heavily involved with those guys. We came up with this this new flagship product called Fast Fuel, and basically it's the first sports nutritional supplement geared toward functional speed, explosion, stamina, and you know, in today's society, everything's based on speed. You know, what's the guy's 40? This guy can have great film, interview well, be strong, all of the above, but if he runs a bad 40, you lose money. So why not have something that can sustain max velocity training for all athletes? I mean, and it even works great for day-to-day people. I mean, you know, you're on the radio, hey, you need to pick me up. You can take Fast Fuel, and it'll get you through the day and less caffeine than a cup of coffee. So, I mean, it's really beneficial, and I think it's going to be a great product.
Very good. John, hey, thanks so much for joining us. You were a lot of fun.
Thanks, man.
So a jam-packed show here for football today. I want to thank everybody that joined us today. Matt Williamson, good job.
You too, buddy. Merry Christmas.
Yes, it is. It's Christmas, and we'll be back tomorrow to talk about all the presents that the NFL teams got last night. There you have it.
The music provided on today's show is from Mevio's Music Alley, Will Chryski's Metal Mayhem. Check it out at music.mevio.com. For more football talk, be sure to check out Football Tonight, Monday through Thursday at 10 p.m. Eastern on ESPN Radio and ESPNRadio.com.